Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Devin. And
there's no trickery this time.
Nope.
You may have noticed last time, Devin pulled a fast one on me and said, I'm Sarah. Totally threw me off.
Yeah, it was really funny.
But then I got you back on Patreon.
Yes, she goes, I'm Devin, and I wasn't expecting
it. You weren't fucking expecting it.
Even though I literally just did it to you.
That's why I did it.
I know.
I didn't think you would expect it.
I didn't. That was good.
You were probably thinking, like a lot of women, I would play the long game.
Right.
And like wait for a moment. I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
We live in the Trump era. It's
instant
happening
karma.
Now. It's happening now. We don't know what's going to, we don't know what tomorrow will bring.
Right.
So I'm doing this
right now.
I think we also, before we get into the show, we need to talk about your ensemble.
Yes.
Because it is glorious.
Yes. So this morning I woke up and was like, fuck this shit. Also, Anna Faris and Chris Pratt are separating.
Mm.
So I was, it was like an extra layer of like, no.
Mm.
No.
I have feelings about Anna Faris and Chris Pratt. But I'm gonna hold them.
Hold
but I know
them.
A lot of people felt upset.
Yes, I was upset about it. Because they could be a fantasy in my head.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you see this sort of celebrity couple.
Exactly.
No one ever knows what's going on with couples.
Exactly.
But like, when you see a celebrity couple that you think we're good together,
yeah.
You're like, what?
Why?
I'm questioning everything.
Well, and then when I found out, I was like, I'll be right back. I gotta go find Chris Pratt somewhere in L.A. Because...
I mean, we do live in L.A.
So I gotta go find him.
You were sad, and then you were like, actually,
I'm okay with being a rebound.
I could use this as an advantage.
Exactly.
Like, in my wildest dreams.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But so this morning, I was like, fuck this shit.
Evergreen.
I'm gonna wear a caftan.
Yes!
And so Sarah walks in and I'm like, I've gone full Grey Gardens. I have an extra caftan if you would like to partake. And
I would.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you know, because you don't watch Real Housewives.
Right, that's true.
But there's a woman who's on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills named Kyle.
Okay.
She's actually Paris Hilton's aunt.
Okay.
Don't ask me how I know all this.
Okay.
I know a lot of things.
It's fine.
She is like a... certainly a fan of caftans.
Yeah, love a good caftan.
Like, so I am like, I love a good caftan. I don't have one,
right.
But I aspire to own them.
Yeah. I have a number of caftans that I'm not going to reveal to y'all because it's embarrassing.
I mean,
it's more than three.
It's a sight to see. But today is a caftan
It's
day.
A caftan. Well, and then Sarah was like, what's the difference between a caftan and a muumuu? And I was like, well, PR, mostly.
Yeah, I honestly, I do wonder if there is a difference. I think we're going to get listener
feedback on this. Yeah.
Like, technically, a muumuu is this, and a caftan is this. And Devin's like, I think caftan is just like a more modern, like sounding word.
Exactly.
And like, so people are more accepting of it.
Exactly.
You think of muumuu and you think of like your aunt.
Right. You're like dowdy, like house dress sort of thing. But and you think of caftan and you're like glamour, beach,
yeah, exactly,
resort.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Well,
so it's just PR.
PR. Least. That's what I think. But
nothing wrong with aunts wearing muumuus.
Hey,
I just want to say.
No.
Like, I love a good muumuu.
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, 29,
the
word might turn you off,
but it
you
shouldn't
don't think it's age appropriate.
Exactly, but it shouldn't because caftans are the shit.
Yeah,
so
and so are muumuus.
Exactly. So anyway, let's get into what we're actually going to talk about today.
We start with like caftans. We're like, okay, so now we
have serious news:
Donald Trump and Russia
and fuck the shit.
Yeah.
And yeah. So
this is our wheelhouse.
This is kind of what we do best.
This is what we do. We multitask.
Exactly. So first, as always, we're going to get into some listener feedback.
Yes.
And then we're going to go back into the perma block. Although it's kind of a short one this time.
It is a short one.
Trump land bullshit.
Yeah, only one story. We're going to talk about how the Trump administration is kind of going on attack against leakers and possibly journalists as well.
Right.
So lots to unpack there.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we have our Russia updates.
Right. Which is kind of a longer one. So we're talking about the subpoenas that Mueller has issued through a Washington, D.C. grand jury.
Yes.
And sort of the implications of that. And then we've got some, like, other Russia bits and nibbles, again, that we've kind of collected that haven't really made it into one section yet.
There's a lot of, like, stories circulating that we want to summarize.
Exactly.
That we can't delve into because otherwise our podcast would be 3 hours.
3 hours. Which I know that we have no problem with the longer podcast now, but 3 hours is a little excessive.
It's
like,
even for us.
Yeah. And then... block four is our gratitude check, which is sorely needed. And we have a couple of great listener gratitude checks as well.
Yes, we love those.
I know. I think it's been such a fun addition to the show.
It really has.
And then it's Monday, so got to start the week out strong with the Donald Trump dishonor and Dick Watery.
And we chose two stories because we wanted to delve
a little deeper
into both.
Exactly. And... it's funny because when Sarah and I talk about that, we always just call it like Dickwad of the Week.
Yeah.
So, Dickwad of the Week.
Yeah, for sure.
And then finally, we have some action items for y'all. So things you can do after you're done listening to the show. Okay, Sarah, so first off, let's get into some listener feedback.
Yeah, so Wonder Troll tweeted us and said, quote, great interview and loved in particular Carlos's comments on CNN. I too have to watch them for work, and it's an exercise in hair pulling, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, what he was saying about CNN was so, like, illuminating, mm-hmm. and things that I hadn't really thought about, and now it's all I can see when I watch CNN.
I know, and it's funny because I think for those reasons, whether I knew it or not, that's why I never watched CNN.
Exactly. But having a name for it has really helped me, like, see it and point it out in other places.
Yeah, and so at Wondershul, we're sorry that you are also obligated to watch CNN. Like, it would make me scream, too.
Yeah.
You know what? Interesting little side note on that, because we talked about the Trump surrogate problem on CNN with Carlos in our interview last week, and Kayleigh McEnany recently left, and now she's doing like
Trump TV,
Trump news, or like real news or whatever they call it, that like his daughter-in-law started. So it's like her and Kayleigh McEnany, and like that's chilling.
It's really creepy.
It's really, really creepy. I mean, it's like straight up propaganda.
Yeah, I mean, that's straight like state-sponsored television.
Yeah, and I mean, like, to a certain extent, like that's what all media teams do,
of
right?
Course.
They're trying to put the most positive spin, but when you're calling shit fake news and
you're saying this is the real news.
All this like probably stuff that probably if you fact checked it, half of it wouldn't be true.
Exactly.
That's really creepy.
It is really creepy.
So something to flag, to keep note of. So thank you, Wondershul. We love talking to Carlos. He was so much fun.
He's so much fun. Like I said, it was one of our funniest interviews. Yeah. Like we had to cut a little bit out where we were just like giggling.
Yeah. just a giggle fest.
Yeah, it was great.
But it was really illuminating and we loved talking to him.
Yeah.
And then Kate emailed us, and so what did she say?
She said, quote, I, too, was infuriated in learning that the DCCC has issued a policy that they will support anti-choice candidates. The day I learned this, I had my checkbook in my bag, and I opted to donate to Stacey Abrams.
Ooh.
As I rode the bus home from work that day, I listened to your interview with Stacey. Talk about serendipity.
Yeah.
Thanks again for all that you do. You have no idea what a difference it makes. You are giving a voice and talking points to so many. We will not be silenced.
Yes. I love that serendipitous. Donate to Stacey Abrams. Listen to Stacey Abrams on Hellbent. And Stacey Abrams was, I mean, we love all of our interviews.
We do.
But she was a breath of fresh air.
She was.
In so many ways, because she's a prominent Democratic leader. She's certainly a star on the rise. And she's speaking our language.
She really
is. Social issues are fucking economic issues.
I love that.
We need
love
more
that.
Democrats saying that.
Also, she loves Captain Janeway. I'm just saying.
Devin, you really lucked out our last two interviews.
I know.
Two full-on nerd-out sessions.
Yes.
Like, so great.
I love it.
I also loved another listener email from Jessa, who, along the same vein, and she said, quote, I appreciate that you are both very salty and very grateful. And I just, like, I want to say I'm totally comfortable with being Salty Spice.
Salty Spice.
By the way.
That's good. Yeah. You can be Salty Spice and I can be...
Sweet Spice.
Sweet. Thanks, Sarah.
We can switch off. Like she said, we're both very salty and very grateful.
That's true.
That is definitely our brand.
That's true. Like a Hufflepuff and a Slytherin. Yeah.
And then Bryn tweeted us and asked, quote, is there a URL to get the Patreon audio content in podcast form? Another show I support has that. So apparently Patreon offers the ability to have an RSS link for audio content so that every new post just automatically comes in your podcast app.
Yeah.
Which we did not know.
No, we did not.
So Devin's working on that.
Yes.
And thank you to Bryn for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah.
Like, Devin legit said to me when I told her about that, she was like, our listeners are so smart.
Yeah, right. Like, I had no idea. Let's do that.
I know. I also, sorry, just to backtrack, I just want to say to Kate, the email, thank you for that email.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's wonderful to hear that.
It really is.
We do hear a lot of women saying that it sort of, our voices help them feel more confident
in
speaking about politics and pushing back, and that is awesome.
That's like, really all we want.
Women will not be silenced.
Absolutely. And then finally, one of our Facebook group admins, Crystal, emailed us.
Yes.
And was saying that she would like us to shout out to the Dickwads Be Gone Facebook group.
Oh, in our like end sequence.
Yeah, in our end sequence. So it's actually been a while since we've
updated
that.
So at the end of the show, when we're done, you hear that sort of like message of to follow Hellbent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We do need to update that. And that is a good call.
Yeah.
So thank you, Crystal, for that. And then also Audioboom.
Yes.
So we have a sort of update on our hosting services.
Yeah, so we are now working with the network, Audioboom, and we've been transitioning over to their system. So there was a little bit of you know, transitional hiccups.
Yes.
With SoundCloud and Audio Boom and just kind of, there's always, yeah. You know.
So you might have noticed that if you listen on SoundCloud, the episode didn't populate.
Yes.
So we're working with Audio Boom to
fix that.
To make sure that that doesn't happen in the future.
Right.
So thank you to those who pointed that out.
Yes.
And then the show notes from last Thursday will be up today.
Today.
All right, Devin, let's get into our permablock, which is actually maybe a permablock, although I'm sure next podcast it'll be replaced with something else, and right. It won't be a permablock. Don't sweat the details, everyone. but let's get into some Trumpland bullshit. And like Devin said, we have one story that we really wanted to focus on in this section, and it's about the Trump administration sort of going on the attack against leakers and also possibly journalists. And this happened on Friday. So can you give everyone a sense of what happened here?
Right. So Jeff Sessions in particular went on this attack, like you said, on Friday, warning about a possible crackdown on both reporters and their sources inside the federal government.
Yeah, so just another chill day.
Yeah.
Another chill Friday. Another day that ends in Y.
Right.
This goddamn administration that is so dark on every level.
Seriously. And this is really, really chilling.
It really is. And it's like one of those things where it's hard to elucidate why it's so chilling. Because we've seen so much of that rhetoric from Trump and his team around him that, like, you know, Trump has repeatedly criticized news outlets and their work as fake news, quote unquote, like we mentioned in listener feedback. And they also have gone hard after the use of anonymous sources. So, the leaks that happen, mm-hmm. which is standard journalistic practice. Like, that just happens.
Right.
And, like, really, if there are leaks happening in your White House, there's something wrong with your administration.
Right.
Like, there will always be some leaks, but to the extent that it's happening, that means that there's something larger wrong with what you're doing.
Yeah, and the people who are working on it are like, no, this needs to
be said and get out in the public.
Right. And, you know, we've said it before, and I think our Eric Thomas was the first one to say it, like, Beyonce did an entire secret album and nobody fucking knew.
That is so true.
Like, get on her PR level.
Yeah, I mean, Beyonce did a better job of, like our Eric Thomas said, of keeping that under wraps for a year.
Yeah.
No one fucking knew. And, I mean, every day is new leaks.
Exactly. So, you know, and the fact that the administration is reviewing this policy leaves open the possibility of sentencing journalists for not disclosing their sources, which...
Yeah, that was kind of what he was inferring in his press conference on Friday.
Right.
Sessions.
Exactly. And it's just, that's really scary because the whole, like, anonymous sources have, like you said, been a journalistic standard. It's a journalistic practice. Ben Weisner of the ACLU said, quote, "A crackdown on leaks is a crackdown on the free press and on democracy as a whole."
Yep.
Which is so true.
100%.
And
free press is a cornerstone of democracy.
It's a check. It is.
It's called the Fourth Estate for a reason.
Exactly.
Right?
Because it really does keep politicians and the people in power
accountable
to the people.
And for the most part, honest.
Honest?
Although we have a liar in chief.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say it keeps him honest. He has no shame.
Right.
But it does bring stories into the fray that we might not have known. I mean, so much of what we've learned about Russia, for example, is the result of reporting.
Right. And digging and journalism and making
sources.
Making those larger connections,
mm-hmm.
You know, seeking all that out. And, you know,
I mean, we would still have fucking Mike Flynn.
Right. If we didn't have
as National
reporting.
Security advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he is quite possibly and is probably compromised. That's why Sally Yates went to fucking the White House chief counsel.
Yep.
And to, I don't know, did she go to Sessions?
I don't think so.
Oh, wait, Sessions wasn't in place.
Right.
Of course, because she was acting director.
Right.
But she went to...
McGahn.
I believe she went to McGahn.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Russia and these bigger scandals mm-hmm. are definitely part of the reporting. But then also, like, Sarah Cliff's reporting on the healthcare.
Yes.
And how...
You're absolutely correct.
And how, you know, congressmen and senators wanted to take themselves, like, accept themselves from these rules. And she reported on that. And then they changed it.
Yeah.
Because it came to light.
Yeah.
And so it's not just these bigger, like, Trump-specific things that need to be reported on.
It's the day-to-day policy.
Yeah.
Or, like, the big policy
yeah.
that they're trying to fucking overhaul.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
So, you know, it's also just things like policy day-to-day. Like, a free press is central to any administration, any democracy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something just to keep in mind.
And ironically enough, when Mike Pence was a congressman, he introduced the, quote, Free Flow of Information Act and said in defense of the media, quote, I believe the only check on government power is in real time is a free and independent press. And I say it's ironic because, I mean, you can't fathom someone saying this among this administration.
Right.
But really, like you said, the free press is crucial to democracy, and people on both sides of the aisle have long recognized that.
Yeah. It's important.
But we're entering chilling times where that is being called into question, and Sessions is talking about potentially, you know, trying to compel journalists. Like, if they don't reveal their sources, they might go to jail or face other punishments. And, like, that is pretty chilling.
That is pretty chilling. Well, also, this Mike Pence story is also a really good example of how he has removed himself from the entire Trump narrative.
Yeah.
And sort of sidestepped a lot of these scandals pretty neatly.
Yeah.
And so things like this, things that he said or things that he might not agree with, he just is completely silent.
And just a heads up, mm-hmm. our guest on Thursday... she's brilliant, but we're going to be talking to her about Mike Pence
yes.
and why you should be worried.
So let's put a pin in that.
But yeah, Rod Rosenstein, for his part, he did try to do some damage control on Sessions' briefing and said that the DOJ would not be going after, they would be going after leakers, not journalists. And apparently the number of leak investigations has tripled in the Trump administration. We don't know how many, they've just said it's tripled.
Well, and I think that's the function of like, all shark attacks happen at the beach. You know. No. So, okay.
What do you mean by that? I mean, I like that saying. I'm with you.
No. The number of investigations has tripled because there are so many leaks coming out of this administration.
Oh, I see. You're saying it's like a self-fulfilling.
A little bit.
Or it's like playing into each other.
They kind of play into each other. Mm. Where it's like, and the more that they investigate, the more leaking, the more they investigate.
Yeah.
And so what I mean
is...
It's a cycle. And what I mean is like there's kind of... You know, that's why there's that equivalency.
Sure.
Like, all shark attacks happen at the beach. Or not all, but because sharks are in the water.
Yeah.
Like,
I gotcha.
You got me.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, historically, government employees or contractors who do give sensitive information to the media are much more likely to be prosecuted than the reporters who receive it.
Right. See, reality winner.
Yes. She is the most recent one. And there's certainly another conversation to be had about that.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
We're not going to have it right now.
No.
But there is definitely a larger conversation around that. You know, and I think it's an important distinction to know it's not illegal to leak information.
Right.
It's what, like, when you divulge classified information...
That's illegal.
That's what's illegal.
And that's why reality winner is a specific sort
Yes, that's why they're pursuing charges against her. But, like, all the leaks that are happening about, like, what's happening in the day-to-day White House...
Right, like, or, like, what Trump is like or how much TV he watches, none of that's illegal.
That's not illegal.
No.
So, like, I don't know what they plan to do about that.
Right.
Like, that to me, I'm like, you gotta get your house in order.
Yeah.
If people are leaking, it means they don't have a lot of faith in your leadership.
Exactly. Or they're really, truly worried about what's going on.
Exactly.
And this is the only avenue they have to sort of, you know, express that fear and make sure that they...
Get it out to the public.
Yeah, exactly. The public knows about it. So, U.S. regulations give journalists special protections, barring them from law enforcement that might, quote, reasonably impair news gathering activities, which this is a really important point because, you know, you always hear about places like Russia mm-hmm. where they would literally murder journalists, where, you know...
Dissenters
of any kind, mm-hmm. Where they do not have these... protections in place because they don't want a fair news gathering, mm-hmm. you know, activity. They want to impair it. That's the whole point.
Right. They want to stay in power.
Exactly.
I mean, there's so much at play.
Yeah.
And, you know, jailing reporters? I'm on the side of no.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a slippery, slippery slope.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, talking to get Carlos again about Democratic backsliding
yes.
and how this training goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And so this may not feel like this huge deal, like, oh, they're investigating leaks, like,
yeah.
or they're investigating...
And maybe journalists.
And maybe journalists, but it's really leaks
yeah.
and whatever. But that's, like, training us to be okay with that. So when they take the next step, that doesn't seem so bananas.
Exactly. And, like, don't forget that just recently, like, a goddamn now congressman... body slammed a reporter. So the guy who ended up winning the special election at Montana at large. And also a journalist was arrested recently in West Virginia. So this shit is not happening in a vacuum.
Right. And it is the backsliding, so we can't fall asleep on these stories. OK, Okay, Sarah. So speaking of journalistic
enterprises,
let's get into our Russia update section, which is also fast becoming a permablock.
Yeah. I mean, we say that about a lot of sections.
That's true. But so Mueller has issued subpoenas.
Yeah. And we found this out through reporting.
Exactly. Which is kind of how I was trying to clunkily transition.
No, you did it well.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, it's the caftan speaking.
It really is. And so, yeah, so a Washington, D.C. grand jury has been kind of convened and impaneled, I think is the word. And Mueller has been issuing subpoenas. So can you kind of give us some context?
Yeah, so first of all, for those who are unclear on grand juries, so grand juries are generally responsible for deciding whether a defendant should be charged with a crime in the first place. It's also a very powerful investigative tool that permits prosecutors to issue subpoenas for records, compel the turning over of such records, and to take testimony from witnesses under oath. They also operate in secret-ish.
Yeah.
Because subjects of the investigation, witnesses, and their lawyers are under no duty to remain silent.
Right.
I mean, I think certain witnesses, you know, there might be a gag order.
Right.
But I think, like, lawyers, certainly, and the people who are subject to the investigation, they're not necessarily required to be silent.
So exactly.
I think we're probably going to see leaks happen as to what is going on.
Right, right.
With this grand jury. And, you know, according to the Conservative National Review, the most significant conclusion we can draw from this news is that the so-called Russia investigation officially is a criminal investigation. But that also doesn't necessarily mean that charges are imminent or that they will ever be filed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important to keep in mind. That all being said, prosecutors don't usually go the grand jury route unless they see a realistic possibility of filing criminal charges.
Right.
So that's another thing to keep in mind.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. So a grand jury itself doesn't necessarily mean charges are coming,
yeah,
but it does sort of signal that this investigation is moving.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Significant.
Yes. So this kind of context aside, in this case, Mueller has issued grand jury subpoenas related to Trump Jr.'s 2016 meeting with a Russian lawyer at Trump Tower that Kushner and Manafort were there, and apparently all they talked about was adoptions.
Yes, they only talked about adoptions.
Yeah.
They love it, especially later in the summer. And we're drawing this from CNN's reporting. So
yes.
This is where we're sourcing from. So yeah, the subpoena seeks both documents and testimony from people involved in the meeting. Like you said, it's Trump Jr., it's likely Manafort, it's likely Kushner.
K-Dog. Well, it's also interesting. I was listening to a lawyer talk about grand juries in a broader sense, and he was saying that, you know, a lot of times you don't necessarily use grand juries to subpoena people.
Hmm.
You use it to subpoena companies to get records and documents.
Interesting.
Like an email provider or a cell phone provider.
Interesting.
To sort of get, like, this additional information around the people that you're investigating.
That's not something I knew.
So I thought that was sort of an interesting,
yeah, you know,
thing to think about.
Yeah. And, you know, federal investigators have seized on Trump and his associates' financial ties to Russia, sort of apart from this, or maybe separate and combined with,
yeah,
this news. So they're seeing that, this sort of financial money trail, they're seeing that as possible, like, fertile ground.
Right.
And the most fertile avenue for moving this probe forward. These same sources that said that the web of financial ties could offer a more concrete path toward potential prosecution than the broader and more and, like, murkier question of collusion in the 2016
right.
campaign. Because right now there's a lot of sort of on the surface.
Right.
There's, I don't want to say evidence, but, like, indications that point to collusion. But in
right.
terms of what might hold up in, like, a court of law.
Right. Would be difficult
would
to
be
produce.
Difficult to prove.
Maybe. I mean, I...
But the following the money trail is easier. If they can find something, it's more concrete.
Right. So, I mean, in my head, the way I see it is collusion in general is sort of a thought crime. It's like a thinky crime.
Right.
You know, it's about intent and it's about, like, you know, backdoor deals. And it's a little harder to prove, but then money is on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And banks have records.
Yeah.
And money goes somewhere.
Yeah.
And then money buys something.
Although I think their challenge is like, figuring out this web of shell companies.
Oh, 100%.
We've talked about Trump's, like, real estate
mm-hmm.
business and how all these, like, condos have been bought. And
right,
it's like
by LLC, anonymous LLCs.
Anonymous LLCs. So, yeah, so that's another sort of like separate thing that's,
right.
that's interesting. It's also unclear whether the subpoenas issued in recent weeks relate to other members of Trump's campaign, who have also been a focus of the Mueller investigation, including Paul Manafort, who was in that Trump Tower meeting. And of course, he was a former campaign chairman.
You know, I feel like people forget that sometimes. I just want to keep harping on that.
I know.
And he was the campaign chair or the campaign manager right when Trump got the official nomination mm-hmm. from the RNC, which it's just that timing is really neat.
And we've talked about the moving the pro-Ukrainian plank from
right.
the sort of platform.
Right.
Yeah. Also remember that in May, news broke that federal prosecutors had issued grand jury subpoenas to some associates of Mike Flynn as a part of the ongoing probe into Russian meddling. That was for a grand jury in Alexandria, Virginia. And then Mueller took over the larger Trump-Russia investigation in mid-May. And this is significant because the grand jury that he has impaneled in D.C. is in D.C. So he's mm-hmm. using a separate grand jury in downtown D.C., which is closer to their offices.
Right.
And Del Quinton Wilbur, who was one of the reporters that broke the story in the Wall Street Journal, told NPR, quote, "If you were just investigating Michael Flynn, you would continue probably using that same grand jury, right? Why reinvent the wheel, so to speak? It seems they're going to be looking at a lot more than that, because if it was just Flynn, they would probably be using the same grand jury."
I mean, that's a really good point.
So that's interesting.
It is interesting. Mm-hmm. You have to ask yourself, like, why? Mueller, from all accounts, doesn't do something for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't fuck around.
Exactly.
And he's assembled an all-star team.
Exactly,
he's
who also don't fuck around.
Widely respected.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of questions. I'm assuming we'll get some answers in the coming weeks or months, possibly.
Years.
But, of course, this grand jury news sent everyone into kind of a tailspin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like big news, you know? I did see people, including my rep, mm-hmm. Ted Lieu, and our fave, Maxine Waters,
right.
say that not only is there a lot of smoke, it feels like there's probably some fire.
It does. It does.
But Preet-Bharara tried to kind of temper that a little bit. He tweeted, quote, "Not sure why all the hyperventilating re-Russia grand jury. Mueller hired 16 prosecutors. Of course there would be a grand jury. This will take time," which kind of reminds us, Devin, how long did it take for Watergate to reach this conclusion?
Over 900 days.
Yeah.
And I will keep saying this because it feels like a second in time because we read it in history books,
mm-hmm.
but it was a long, arduous process.
Yes.
And, you know, we're only at, what, the 6-month mark? So we've got time,
Yeah.
And so even though
But then
this...
part of me feels like we're running against the clock, right?
A little
like,
bit.
We're, like, running against... Hopefully Trump doesn't fucking destroy democracy and
right.
blow it into smithereens before
right.
we can figure out a way
to
possibly remove him. I mean, my rep Ted Lieu has basically said 2018, focus on 2018.
Yep.
But I'm like, I don't know that we can make it that far.
I know. Well, my rep, Brad Sherman, was like, fuck you, here's impeachment papers.
Yeah, articles of impeachment.
Like, go.
Yeah, we have some pretty awesome reps.
Yeah. You know, this is, it's not... a nothing burger.
Yeah, so...
To use Maxine Waters' because she tweeted, like...
Yeah, and everyone's sort of favorite term.
Nothing burger. But there's obviously been serious concerns that Trump would try to get Mueller removed. And as I said in our bonus pod on Thursday...
Yeah, very recently.
Very recently. Lindsey Graham is actually one of a handful of senators who have introduced bills to keep Trump from firing Mueller. And it will be interesting to see how all of this plays out.
Yeah, because... I mean, there's been concern in recent weeks because Trump has, you know, kind of gone after Sessions and said he shouldn't recuse himself. And so, I mean, everyone fucking hates Jeff Sessions.
And Ted Cruz and everyone.
And everyone. All the Republicans. But especially Jeff Sessions.
Yes.
Like, no one's, like, advocating, like, he should keep his job
because
he's a stand-up guy.
God, no.
No one's rooting for him to keep his job, but there is a larger concern of if he is removed, what does this mean for the Russia investigation?
Right.
Will he try to get Mueller removed? And so you're seeing a bipartisan effort from senators to try to ensure that no matter what happens to Sessions
that
Mueller
can't.
Stays in place.
Absolutely. And this is sort of the Nixon parallels with the Saturday Night Massacre, you know, where he had to fire the attorney general and the deputy and, you know, someone else.
Before he could get someone to fire the special prosecutor.
Exactly.
Which is what it was known.
Exactly. So, you know, that's kind of what they're worried about and what they're trying to head off with this legislation.
Yeah. Okay, so Devin, let's get into some other Russia-related bits and nibbles.
Yes.
So Vox also exclusively reported last Thursday that top FBI officials could testify against Trump.
Yes.
That seems significant.
It does seem significant. Well, apparently, shortly after Mueller was appointed as special counsel, FBI acting director Andrew McCabe told several of the highest-ranking members of the FBI that they should consider themselves possible witnesses to any obstruction of justice investigation.
Wow.
And that could be up to 10 or more people, including Comey and McCabe.
And apparently the FBI's, like, counsel,
yeah,
like their lawyer, essentially, he kept very detailed notes.
Yeah.
So he might be...
All these note-takers.
Well, that's what they
said. I love it.
The FBI, there's a culture of that.
Right.
Like, it's important. Important,
right,
that everyone kind of does that,
right,
to an extent.
Absolutely. Well, and this also kind of reminds me of what Comey said at his testimony after he was fired, where he was like, he took these contemporaneous notes and then shared them with literally everybody in the FBI.
Well,
apparently.
But that's the interesting thing is that, you know, a lot of sort of Republicans who are trying to defend Trump were like, well, it's one guy's word against Trump, right? But if Comey shared these, you know, the notes with people, mm-hmm, or he relayed what happened in these meetings, which he did.
Right. And he rattled off, like, literally all the top staff at the FBI.
So there's more people that can kind of corroborate him.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's still his story.
Right.
But the fact that he almost immediately was talking to his colleagues.
Right.
Says something.
Right.
And then we've talked about it before, but contemporaneous notes can hold up in court.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting dynamics around that. And, you know, as one senior law enforcement official told Vox, this has never, like we said, this has never been the word of Trump against James Comey. This is more like the FBI versus Donald Trump.
Right. Which, if we've seen in the past with Nixon and, mm-hmm, and other people, like, the FBI usually wins.
Well, the FBI is unusually popular.
Yes.
Like, it's one of those, like, government agencies that has high approval ratings.
Right.
It's widely respected.
Right. So, and Donald Trump is not.
So good luck with that.
Good luck.
They're also a lot more professional, clearly, than Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So they've got that going for them, too.
Bunch of note takers.
Trump's
after my own heart.
Yeah.
Trump is on his first vacation. I'm using air quotes. You can't see that.
But he's working, Devin. He's not just golfing. P.S. He's just golfing.
P.S. He's totally just golfing.
He's totally just golfing.
Okay, so...
Moving on.
Flynn updated his disclosure forms to reflect pay from the Mercer family. Well, really from the Cambridge Analytica
which is
controlled by the Mercer family. Excuse me. This is significant because it's a controversial data analysis company that aided the Trump campaign.
Yeah.
So also, Flynn has now had to file 3 versions of his financial disclosure forms. 3.
I mean, there's a lot of forgetful people in Trump's circle.
I mean
J-Dog is constantly amending his security clearance forms.
Right?
Like, Flynn is constantly amending his financial disclosure forms. I mean, they're just forgetting. There's nothing nefarious about this. Like,
they're just not note takers like the FBI. They just don't write shit down.
It's always both. Like, they're both nefarious and incompetent.
Yes, absolutely. The special counsel's office is also said to have requested White House documents on Flynn, which Preet Bharara says is much more significant than the grand jury news.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that he said that.
So, like, the grand jury is kind of, like, blowing up the news cycle, but then the fact that they're looking at these documents for Flynn,
mm-hmm,
is very interesting.
Yeah, so I guess investigators have also questioned witnesses about whether Flynn was secretly paid by the Turkish government during the final months of the campaign.
I forgot that was a thing.
Well, remember... I just can't believe... Remember that fucking Wall Street Journal story about how Flynn essentially conspired to kidnap that Turkish cleric?
Yes.
And now it's just like a blip.
And then sometimes...
Like, I feel like the need to remind people of that whenever we talk about Mike Flynn. Because it's bananas that we don't remember that. It's like out of people's collective memories.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, oh yeah, and he was also like a foreign agent for... What? Like, are you fucking kidding me?
This is why we say Russia-related.
Right, because
Flynn is involved in the Russia investigation, but he also has other stuff that they're looking into,
right,
that could maybe tie into everything, but we think,
right,
it's important. So sort of on this sort of, if Flynn was secretly paid by the Turkish government during the presidential campaign, So taking money from Turkey or any foreign government is not illegal.
No.
But failing to register as a foreign agent is a felony, and then trying to hide the source of the money by routing it through a private company or some other entity and then paying kickbacks to the middlemen, that could lead to numerous criminal charges. Right. So that's what they're looking into.
Right.
And I think this is why Preet Bharara is saying this is almost more significant.
Right.
If they find documents that show this, like, that could mean trouble for Mike Flynn.
Absolutely. Like, and kind of what I said before, like, collusion is sort of a thinky crime.
Yeah.
Money laundering is a paper crime.
Yeah.
You know?
If you're going to prove it, you have to prove it through literal receipts.
Literal receipts. Literal, like, how receipts. Much you paid people.
Yeah. Okay, so this is how widespread this Russia story yes. is. That even the Dallas Morning News, I think this was technically an op-ed column, but there was some, like, I think there was some original research and reporting yeah. here. So
this is a banana story, by the way.
I can't tell what's bananas and what's not, because yeah. everything seems so, that's like, fair. You know, code red. But but the Dallas News has reported sort of a tangled web that connects Russian oligarch money to GOP campaigns. So Trump and the PACs for Mitch McConnell, Marco Rubio, Scott Walker, Lindsey Graham, John Kasich, and John McCain accepted $7.35 million in contributions from a Ukrainian-born oligarch who is the business partner of two of Putin's favorite oligarchs, and a Russian government bank.
So that's just, like, the Republican, like, dream team lineup.
Yeah.
And then over $7 million from this
oligarch.
Putin-connected oligarch.
Right.
Cool.
Low-key.
Low-key.
So, like, you know, the question that this column posed was, is it, quote-unquote, party loyalty or other Republicans' sort of own, at least tenuous, connections to Russian oligarchy that has caused the GOP to not be as forceful in pushing, like, Trump and Russia investigations?
Well, first of all, hashtag, it's always both.
Yeah. If there's anything we've learned, it's always both.
But second of all, I mean, that's really a chilling...
That's a good question. I mean, McCain has been forceful in some ways in yeah. his words. And, you know, it's hard to know. We just know that there is money that has flown from
right.
a Putin-connected oligarch or
right.
a Russian-connected oligarch
right.
in some way that's going to, you know, top GOP people.
Right.
And we also know that they're not really pushing on this Trump-Russia investigation.
That's
so it's hard
true.
To know if it's party loyalty or if they're worried about certain things surfacing
coming
from
out.
Them. And it just reminds me of the fact that the RNC, didn't the RNC get hacked? But they didn't
yes,
release any of those
exactly.
emails.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel like they know that there's shit on them.
Right.
And they don't necessarily, they want to proceed with caution.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I've heard it said several times, but, like, Putin, Russia, not a Democrat or a Republican, they're an opportunist.
Yeah.
And they will go after anyone that they think can hurt them. And also, but
they just want to destabilize our democracy. They want to destabilize the West. That's sort of their larger goal.
Exactly. But I also will say, like, Lindsey Graham, for example, is authoring this bill that would protect Robert Mueller. So you have to kind of weigh it all. Who
it's
knows?
More of a question.
It's a question.
I don't think we can come to any conclusion, but it's an interesting question.
Over 900 days. We will learn at some point, even if we have to tell our grandchildren about the history books.
Fucking hopefully.
Fucking hopefully we will learn it. So.
And then finally, the U.S. reportedly intercepted suspected Russian agents' chatter that Manafort asked for their help with Clinton. So I love that this is a bullet point.
We're yeah.
like, oh, so potentially Manafort was chatting or Manafort is possibly implicated in this collusion because there is intercepted chatter
yeah.
that sort of shows Russian agents talking about him in connection to Clinton.
Yeah.
So that's, like, low-key. It's
whatever.
Fine. Totally fine. Just a bullet point.
Just a bullet point. This Russia investigation is bananas.
And also, again, I'm going to get on my high horse and say that Russia matters.
Russia does matter.
And I'm annoyed with Democrats sort of peddling this line of voters don't care about Russia, because I would just like to point to the fact that 19.5 million people watch Comey's testimony.
Right.
People fucking care.
Yes.
And I also want to point to the fact that Republicans can literally manufacture scandal out of nothing.
Yeah.
Even for the most ridiculous thing, Republicans would make their voters care.
Yeah.
So don't let anyone fucking tell you that this doesn't matter, because it does matter, and it affects everything. It affects our democracy. It affects policies moving forward. It fucking matters.
It does. And, you know, like Carlos Maza said, like, not caring about American Idol, a thing. Yeah. You don't have to care. Not caring about Russia, not a thing. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you care.
It doesn't matter if Trump matters. Voters don't care. Yeah. It doesn't matter
if Democrats don't care.
Certain segment of Democrats don't care, we should care. And that's why we're talking about it. All right, Devin. Well, we covered a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think we could all use a gratitude check.
Yes.
Right about now.
Oh.
Besides caftans.
Besides caftans.
What are you grateful for today?
Moomoos. No, I'm kidding. No. Okay, so I have two fun things to talk about, actually. Nice. So the first one was a BuzzFeed, like, listicle, yes. like, meme thing mm-hmm. that normally they're always, like, funny, but, like, I don't really care. But this one made me laugh, like, deep belly laughs.
From the caftan.
From the caftan, like, deep in the
Which
caftan.
Which allows for breathing and belly laughs.
Exactly. It's perfect. It's the perfect
device.
So this was 9 things Trump said to other world leaders over photos of Lucille Bluth. So
oh, my gosh.
Lucille Bluth is the sort of, like, ridiculous over-the-top matriarch of the Arrested Development family, the Bluths.
We've talked about how there is a lot of parallels between the Trumps mm-hmm. and the Bluths and, like, what's transpiring because there's so much incompetency.
Right, exactly.
And ridiculousness.
So this really, like I said, made me laugh so fucking hard.
Yeah.
So my personal favorite was a picture of Lucille on the phone, like, looking scowly, and it just says, "Why do you discriminate against boats?"
Oh my god.
And well,
was that actually said during?
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So we didn't talk about this at all last week. We tend to not talk about the shit he says,
right? Because it doesn't
really
matter.
Interested in sort of the impact of what's happening,
right, and what he's doing, and then what he says is directing the people who work in the administration are doing.
Yeah, and it's not that this shit doesn't matter at all. We have a limited amount of time.
Right.
We can't have our podcast be 8 hours.
Exactly. We can't have it be all about Trump because that's honestly exactly what he wants.
Yeah, that's part of it.
You know?
I mean, yeah, I have existential feelings. That's an existential question. The larger philosophical question.
Question, sure.
But so anyway, the context for this is there was a transcript released of Trump on phone calls with world leaders. And that happened last week. It was ridiculous. Now Devin's talking about a BuzzFeed listicle that basically overlaid his quotes with pictures of Lucille Bluth.
Right,
which is kind of a brilliant idea.
Well, and apparently these transcripts were leaked, which was another thing.
Oh, like, yeah, we talked about leakers.
Although David from The Atlantic has actually said that leaking these transcripts is highly unusual and actually does have national security implications.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
So there's some layers of complexity there.
Right. But why do you discriminate against boats?
Oh my god.
Literally made my day better. It just made me laugh so hard.
And then it makes me so fucking depressed because we could have had the smartest fucking woman.
Right.
And like, but yeah.
Right.
Lucille Bluth is always funny.
Exactly. You know, and that quote, all of the quotes are pulled out of context, obviously, for maximum, like, impact.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly cannot think of a context where this wouldn't be funny and ridiculous. Like, it's just a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, and it kind of reminds me of what Carlos Maza said about satire.
What I was just going to say is, comedians have become our best journalists in some ways.
Yeah.
You know, to that end, these memes are incredibly funny, but also serve to show the ridiculous aspect of Trump's presidency.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. And I will say these images are funny, and but there is something off-putting, like we've talked about. Like,
mm-hmm.
when our president does so closely resemble an over-the-top, out-of-touch, ultra-wealthy matriarch who puts down her daughter and doesn't know what it's like to struggle in any way, shape, or form, we may have more than just a funny meme factory on our hands here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was also Carlos Maza's point, was
right.
that there has to be an element of ridiculousness that everyone understands is
right.
ridiculous for a sort of quote-unquote joke to land.
Exactly.
For the satire to be powerful.
Right. And, you know, even pulled out of context, these quotes are not what one would expect a sitting president to say to anyone, let alone other world leaders. So it's a very...
Let alone the leader, the supposed leader of the free world.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you just wouldn't expect any of this to come out of his mouth.
He has just degraded this office in so many ways.
Yes.
Totally.
So I'm not grateful for that, but I am grateful for Lucille Bluth and
satire. Yes, I like that.
Okay, so the next thing that I'm grateful for was another article actually in BuzzFeed. But we talked about the explosion of women speaking up about wanting to run.
Mm-hmm.
So last time we talked about it, it was 11,000 women had sort of
indicated
that they wanted to run.
Sure.
So now Emily's List is saying that 16,000 women have reached out about
wow.
running for office. So in 2016, that was their biggest year before 2017, like the most women ever reached out to them.
And what was that number?
920.
That was their, like, all-time high.
Yep, they called it their, quote, Hillary bomb. Like, when Hillary announced she was running, oh, and a bunch of women...
I thought the Hillary bomb was this aftermath.
No, the Hillary bomb was when she announced she was running, a whole bunch of women were like, hey, I want to run too.
Oh.
And so that was the 920 people, and then this 16,000 is just unheard of.
That was, like... And I mean, I don't even know what the metaphor would be.
There's not a good one, that's for sure. So Trump's presidency has led to this huge political engagement, like we were talking about, sort of a catalyst. Emily's List has been around for 32 years, and this kind of just feels like the moment.
Yeah.
Stephanie Shirock, who's the president of Emily's List, said, quote, this is it. I almost feel like we've been practicing for 3 decades for this moment.
Wow. And well, I've seen her in interviews before where she's talking about this phenomenon.
Uh-huh.
And she said that often the hardest thing about getting women elected is just getting them to want to run in the first place.
Right.
Like, they have to call and beg and plead with people, you are qualified, you are talented, you should run. And women are coming to them in such unprecedented numbers. It's, I mean, something's happening.
Right. I mean, a lot of times women think that they... need more experience, or mm-hmm. they're not good enough, but that time is over.
There was something about Donald Trump getting elected.
Donald fucking Trump is, to use Stacey Abrams' word, the occupant of the White House, and he can't string basic sentences together, like, see meme gratitude check above. You are qualified. I mean, at this point, probably overqualified to run for office.
And we talked about, like, even just, like, you know, trickling down to the level of Scaramucci.
Right.
Like, he didn't even have a communications background.
Or political background.
And it was like, ask for a raise and a promotion.
Immediately.
Everyone.
Yes.
Everyone who feels unqualified.
If Trump was hired for the most important job in the country with no prior experience, you're doing just fine, and you can run. You can get the promotion. You can ask for a raise.
Yeah.
Like, this guy...
The world is not always going to be kind,
but
you should do it.
But you should do it anyway. So that's what I'm grateful for. So Sarah, what are you grateful for?
Yeah, and I actually think I read the story as well. The story was about how Emily's List, like, their operations have had to expand to accommodate for...
Which is great.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
So go Emily's List. Okay, so what I'm grateful for, speaking of women in office.
Yeah.
Women running, women
love
in office.
It.
The first group of people I'm grateful for is Senators Tammy Duckworth and Catherine Cortez Masto.
They're great. Just on a day-to-day basis, they're great.
Yes. Love them. So Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, who is a former U.S. Army lieutenant colonel and veteran of the Iraq War, has introduced a series of bills that would bar the U.S. government from deporting veterans convicted of nonviolent crimes. It would also ensure the return of veterans who have already been deported. And it would allow currently deported veterans to access VA services and require military training locations provide naturalization services for active duty service members.
I can't believe this is just becoming a bill now. Or, like, this is just being introduced now.
I mean, it's not surprising that this is a problem.
No, it's not.
Like, but it's disgusting.
If you put your life on the line for our country, you deserve to live here.
Yeah, you deserve
that's
to.
That's it.
I mean, at the very least.
At the very least.
And while there are no exact numbers, NBC News has estimated that some 230 veterans have been kicked out of the U.S. after serving in the military, which, again, is absolutely abhorrent.
Mm-hmm.
And nearly 11,000 non-citizens currently serve in the U.S. military. And this is according to the most recent data from the Immigration Policy Center.
I can't believe that. That number is staggering.
Yeah, I mean, I can and I can't.
Yeah.
Right?
230.
So Duckworth said in a statement, quote, men and women willing to wear our uniform shouldn't be deported by the same nation they risk their lives to defend. These pieces of legislation will help service members become citizens and help veterans who have been deported return to this country, enabling them to live here with their families and ensuring they have access to the life-saving VA care that they have earned because of their tremendous sacrifices.
Yeah.
And then another bill, so this is where Catherine Cortez Masto comes in. There's another bill that's co-sponsored by her that would require the DHS to, quote, identify current and former non-citizen service members. And then the department would then have to, they would then be able to fast-track those veterans' applications for citizenship.
I like that. That's a really great idea.
Yeah, so Cortez Masto said, quote, these bills will help us honor our commitment to veterans and service members seeking U.S. citizenship. And I just want to point out that both Duckworth and Cortez Masto are freshman senators.
Right.
They also represent two of the four senators who are women of color. Like, there's legit only four women of color out of 100 in the U.S. Senate. And that number quadrupled this year because before it was just Mazie Hirono.
Right, it was just one.
Kamala Harris was the other one. So three freshman senators who are women of color. So,
right. You
know, representation matters. And it's not
obviously.
Just, and it's not just, you know, where you come from, but... your experience.
Right.
Like Duckworth is a veteran.
Right.
She sees that this is an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And so representation matters not just for the, quote, identity politics, but because people bring their differing ideas to the table.
And experiences. Also, fucking identity politics is just civil rights.
It's not a thing.
Let's just get that straight. It's civil rights, so fuck off.
So go fuck yourself.
The second thing I'm grateful for is Dana Milbank, who is a Washington Post op-ed writer. He wrote a column called There's No Such Thing as a Trump Democrat that is a must read. I feel like I keep having op-eds, and it's because I'm like on a high horse.
Right.
Like I have a podcast, I have a high horse. Let me tell you some shit. I also want to get like this whole thing tattooed all over my body for all like the sort of Democrats who are obsessed with chasing the white working class vote.
Right.
To be dudes.
White dudes.
But first of all, he wrote one of my favorite leads of all time. It goes, quote, I can't even get through this. Okay, so it goes, quote, do you believe in mermaids, unicorns, and fairies?
Yes, yes, yes.
If so, you may have taken interest in a new mythical creature that appeared during the 2016 election, the Trump Democrat.
I think mermaids are more likely to exist, personally.
Than the Trump Democrat?
Yeah. We haven't explored the whole ocean.
It's true.
We don't know.
We don't know. There's a lot we don't know. So he basically spends the column dismantling the myth of the sort of Obama-Trump voter and why Democrats would essentially be foolish to try to convert them over to our side.
Right.
So new data and an analysis, oof, that was a tongue twister, by AFL-CIO political director Michael Podhortzer goes to the heart of this narrative. So the number of Obama to Trump voters turns out to be smaller than thought. And those Obama voters who did switch to Trump were largely Republican voters to start with.
Mm-hmm.
So the aberration wasn't their votes for Trump, but their votes for Obama.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
It makes sense to me.
Again, like mermaids, we don't know.
although that's like, you're kind of proving the point that the Trump Democrat might exist, because
no,
we don't know.
I'm saying it's less likely to exist than a mermaid.
Okay, so just sort of data to back this up, that the aberration was not their votes for Trump, but their votes for Obama. So, quote-unquote Obama-Trump voters voted for Republican congressional candidates by a 31-point margin, Republican Senate candidates by a 15-point margin, and Republican gubernatorial candidates by a 27-point margin. Their views on immigration and Obamacare also put them solidly in the GOP camp.
So they're Republicans.
So they seem to be consistently pretty Republican.
Right.
Democracy Fund also found a fairly ordinary crossover rate in 2016. So 9.2% of Obama voters supported Trump, and then 5.4% of Mitt Romney voters supported Clinton.
Mm.
That was what they found to be typical and unsurprising degree of partisan loyalty.
Interesting.
So they're saying those figures are pretty ordinary.
Okay.
So the quote here is, quote, the 2016 election did not create more instability in aggregate than others. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is pretty typical. So Milbank concluded his column with something that was reminiscent of what Stacey Abrams said when we spoke to her.
Mm-hmm.
He stated, quote, what Democrats have to do is be Democrats.
Yes.
And it's like, yes, just be fucking Democrats.
Right.
Like, amen.
Amen. We like Democrats. We vote Democrat because we like them.
I mean, if we can get some of these sort of quote-unquote white working class
great.
With our sort of overall plan.
And our messaging.
Great. But they... in my point of view, they should be an afterthought.
We should be
riling up the base.
We should be focusing on
voting rights,
yes.
voter suppression, gerrymandering, all that stuff. Like, that's, for me, where we win. And it's heartening to see data to back this up.
Because
I feel like there's just, in general, one of my biggest gripes is there's so many overarching media narratives.
Right, that have like just these think pieces.
Become accepted as truth that are contradicted by a lot of data.
Right.
So this, I'm glad to see this. So thank you to Dana Milbank for this.
Yes, and I would just also like to point out there's no data on mermaids. So data on this, no data on mermaids. I'm just saying, trust the data.
We're going to get a lot of listener feedback on mermaids.
I know, I'm really excited.
On caftans and mermaids. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Man, my life is weird.
We are living in the upside down.
So. We are living in the upside down. So let's get into some listener gratitude checks. We actually have two, and they are both from women named Amanda.
Different Amandas.
Different Amandas. So the first one, Amanda, via the Facebook group.
Amanda number one.
Amanda number one said, quote, "Grateful for all of the people doing the real work on the ground to make our world better. I have been fortunate this summer to be able to spend some real time doing volunteer projects for three small local nonprofits in my area. One, Operation Sandwich delivers bag lunches and gently used kids books to local parks and playgrounds in the summer for anyone who wants one in order to make sure that kids who rely on school lunch don't go hungry."
Aww.
I know. Two, "We Are, a local reproductive health, education, and advocacy group that will be opening up a clinic this fall. We are a county of 63,000 residents with one of the highest unplanned pregnancy and STI rates in the state. Planned Parenthood closed here a decade ago, and the nearest one is over an hour away."
Wow.
Wow. And three, "The Shop, a local youth center that serves also as a homeless and runaway drop-in center. All three organizations were founded and are run by incredible women." Ugh. That's amazing.
I love hearing stories of people, especially women, doing sort of the quiet essential work.
Right.
That really makes an impact. So that's a beautiful gratitude check,
yes.
Amanda number one.
And thank you so much for putting your time into these really worthy causes. It's really amazing to hear.
And sharing it with us.
And sharing it.
We're really excited to share it with our listeners as well, fellow Hellions. Okay, so Amanda number two. We don't use last names. We feel like it's better to use first names. So Amanda number two said, quote, "I was listening to the podcast a couple of weeks ago when you mentioned an artist in St. Louis who had made an art piece using the confetti that would have fallen when Hillary should have won." I love that.
should have won.
Yeah. I mean, she kind of did.
Yeah.
She got 3 million more votes. Lest we forget. Just side note. She continued, "It was custom made to look like broken glass to celebrate the breaking of the glass ceiling."
I'm going to cry.
I know that, like, gut punch.
I'm going to cry.
So Amanda said, "I was in St. Louis this weekend for the annual leadership gathering for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America."
Woo-woo.
"And a friend and I made a detour to see it. It is best seen at night, but we were still moving in daylight. The man working heard how far we had traveled to see it and why we were in town. And when we left, he gave us one of the pieces. Y'all, I have a piece of the friggin' glass ceiling. I'm framing it, and I can't wait for the day that we elect a female president, and I get to show this to my girls and tell them I have been waiting for this moment."
I know.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna cry.
I'm legit gonna cry.
That is the most amazing. I, first of all, am extremely jealous.
I know that piece of art looked amazing.
It's amazing. And it is so...
There's a lot of feelings.
I'm having a lot
of
feelings.
And I think that still, this is a side tangent, I don't think men truly understand how this election impacted women.
Right.
Like, I think we can try to explain it, and I think that there are a lot of great guys out there
who want to understand.
And they do, to a certain level. But there's something, like, soul deep about this election.
Yeah.
Just, like, reading something like that gets me super fucking emotional.
Yeah.
And so thank you to Amanda, number two.
For sharing
that. And I love that you not only heard it on the podcast and that compelled you to go visit it, but that you got a piece of the fucking, one of the fucking confettis that are supposed to resemble glass ceilings.
It's so amazing.
Awesome.
Okay, Sarah, it is Monday, so it is time for the Donald Trump dishonor in Dick Watery. And we have two dishonorable awardees.
Yeah, we have one dishonorable mention.
Right, and
they
one
really
loser.
Could both be losers.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, they're both, we want to talk about them in depth.
Right.
Both are disturbing in different ways.
Yes.
So the first, so the dishonorable mention is Google. So you may have seen this sort of story circulating this weekend, but apparently there was an internal document that had been disseminated within Google calling for replacing Google's diversity initiatives with policies that encourage, quote, ideological diversity.
Well, isn't that always code for bullshit?
Yeah. I find that it's a favorite defense of white guys.
Yes.
Like, we need
ideological diversity.
We need
both
diversity of thought. It's like, no, you just want an excuse to be racist and sexist,
yeah.
And that's just not going to fly.
Exactly.
So the document, which was written by a senior software engineer, was shared on a company mailing list and soon went, quote unquote, internally viral. And once the story was reported, it went externally viral as well.
Like, right.
People were like, what the fuck?
No.
So the person who wrote the document argued that the representation gap between men and women in software engineering persists because of biological difference between the two sexes.
Excuse me. What?
It's like, this is just like, I mean, like, dude being an asshole 101. And like, this is simplistic. I mean, I don't even have enough words for how right. ridiculous that argument
is. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he also said that Google should not offer programs for underrepresented racial or gender minorities because what tech really needs, Sarah, is more white guys.
That's the thing. We don't have enough white guys in tech doing harmful shit and saying bullshit things.
Right.
So we should get rid of these actual diversity inclusion programs and just allow more dickwads in.
That's, oh my gosh.
You know what? He has a point.
Yeah, that's
such a good idea.
Because
we need more dickwads in this world.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that.
You're right. Why didn't we think of that? It must be a biological difference.
It's our lady brains.
It's our lady brains.
So, FYI, unsurprisingly, Google is currently being investigated by the Department of Labor for its gender pay gap.
Right.
And Silicon Valley as a whole has been repeatedly exposed as a place that discriminates against women and people of color to start, just for starters.
Right.
We talked to Tracy Chow about this recently in Hellbent. And, you know, there's been a slew of stories that have come out that have sort of exposed sexism or sexual harassment, like these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, she essentially said it's going to take a lot more to change the culture. Like,
right.
These are good steps. It's good that it's getting press coverage, essentially. But this is pretty endemic to the culture.
Right.
Like, again, there's a lot of problematic notions.
Right. And Tracy Chow in particular talked about this sort of circular logic of tech is so progressive, like we're so cool and casual and like postmodern, basically.
Yeah.
You know, we wear shirts and flip-flops to work.
Yeah.
And so there's this idea that because of that, they are somehow insulated from these problems.
From bias
or problems that plague other workplaces.
But the interesting thing, and this is what the part of Motherboard's reporting that got me good, is, quote, the document's author also wrote that employees with conservative political beliefs are discriminated against at Google and lamented how, quote, leftist ideology is harmful.
I wish I had, like, written that down, put it in an envelope, sealed it, given it to you, and then said, $10, this is in there.
And then burned it.
And then burned it.
So they argue that the company should have a, quote, more open culture where their viewpoint would be welcomed. The document said that improving racial and gender diversity is less important than making sure conservatives feel comfortable expressing themselves at work, which translation is, I should feel comfortable being openly racist and sexist, and I resent the fact that I'm no longer sort of able to be at least as blatant about it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a hard no.
A fuck no.
A fuck no. And, you know, Carlos Maza would, in our last podcast, you know, talking about this, he said basically that there are certain points of view that aren't worth debating because they are understood to be bad.
Yeah.
It's not like a difference of opinion or difference in points of view. It's just bigotry cloaked in this like pseudoscience battle of
the
sexes kind of like undertone.
Exactly. And that's the thing is that you don't have to debate. I shouldn't have to debate my humanity.
Right.
That is not a point of view that I have to respect
right.
or take on an equal plane.
Right.
Like, we can debate tax policy.
Sure.
Like, if you have a conservative point of view in tax policy, let's talk about
it. Yeah, this is what I always say.
Like, but, like, you don't get to say that women are inherently, you know,
less
not as good at engineering and therefore we shouldn't hire more of them
right.
because there are differences between the sexes that are biological. And essentially, this is the underlying message that happens in tech a lot, is that that there's a lot of white dudes in tech who think that quote-unquote diversity and inclusion, like those sort of hiring practices, is quote-unquote lowering the bar.
Yeah.
And it's bullshit because that's not true. And
mm-hmm.
you have to sort of introspect and think about what you think is a high bar because you have a narrow point of view.
Exactly.
There's things that you haven't considered that could be valuable, for example.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that because this morning I actually read an op-ed by a former Google employee.
Oh, was this on Medium?
Yes.
Yeah, I read this too.
He
was like horrified about it.
He was
everything.
Horrified. And he also made some really good points. He was like, okay, so this guy's a senior engineer. And he basically, as an engineer, your job is to solve problems.
Yes.
And to do that, you have to work with other people.
Yep.
You have to like ask other people their point of view and their ideas. And he was like, so I have a couple of problems with this. The first one being I can no longer assign people to this guy.
Yeah, he was like, if this guy worked for me, like I could not in good faith assign especially women or minorities to work with him because that is hostile.
Right. So right off, he can't do his job effectively.
Yep.
And then second of all, you know, he was saying that these qualities that he's putting down as, quote, feminine in this memo or whatever.
Which was basically like a post on Reddit. Like, yeah, you could have found this post on Reddit.
Oh, 100%.
And or he was like basically 4chan. Like,
right. And he was like, basically, those are qualities that make a good senior engineer. This problem solving, the reaching out to other groups, getting ideas.
It's like, not just sitting at a computer. It's trying to solve problems of the world.
Exactly.
And you're just using technical skills to do it.
Exactly. He was like, if you're sitting alone coding, you are not a senior engineer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of the bottom rung.
Yeah.
That's where you start.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good point.
Yeah.
That definitely stuck out to me. So that is the dishonorable mention. So our loser of the week is, unsurprisingly, a Fox News host.
Oh, God. How many is this now?
I mean, it's pretty much, at this point, you have to, it would save more time to say who isn't a sexually harassing women at Fox News.
Right,
like,
right.
Sad, sad state of affairs. This guy's name is Eric Bolling. He, like we said, is a Fox News host who apparently sent an unsolicited photo of someone's junk. It wasn't clear if it was his or just a penis in general.
This is all just funny because it's like, I'm not even just going to send you my junk. I'm going to send you random
junk.
But
that's what, like, according to this reporting, it's not clear whose junk it was. I just want to be clear. Like, we don't abide by alternative facts. It could have been his.
It
probably was his, but we don't know.
We don't know. Could have been anyone's.
So, God fucking damn it. Men are such trash.
Such trash.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so he sent it via text message to at least two colleagues at Fox Business and one colleague at Fox News. And this is according to 14 sources. 14.
I love in this day and age, it's not like three sources. No. It's not like what, it's 14 fucking people are like, nope, this definitely happened.
14 fucking sources.
Also, just kind of unrelated, but I want to know the thought process where it's like, I have a picture of a penis, and I would like to send it to people that I have to work with every day.
But that's the problem. They think that they can get away with it.
Right.
And they largely do.
Yes, because
they're
just trash.
They're entitled, and they're enabled, and they're everything. So these messages were sent several years ago. So again, he got away with it for a really long time.
Clearly.
And I mean, no one knows if these women decided not to come forward at
all
because they were worried about retribution. So,
yeah.
So he got away with it in whatever respect it happened, he got away with it.
Right.
So they were sent several years ago on separate occasions. Four people outside of the recipients confirmed they'd seen the photo. Again, we don't know whose junk it is, but it is junk. This story is so absurd. And then eight others said the recipients had spoken to them about it. So, like we alluded to, this obviously is not the first time sexual harassment stories have rocked Fox News.
This isn't even, like, the fourth time.
And that's why I think we're, like, almost laughing, because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting, but it's not surprising.
I mean, it's gotten to the
Fox News.
Right, it's gotten to the point where we're not surprised by it.
We're expecting it.
And that is concerning.
Dark. That is Yeah, and so, like, last year, former Fox News chairman Roger Ailes resigned after former Fox News host Gretchen Carlson followed a lawsuit accusing him of sexual harassment. And then, of course, there was a ton of women who sort of came out about that as well.
Right.
And then last April, after a bombshell New York Times report revealed that Bill O'Reilly had quietly settled multiple sexual harassment suits, the network had forced him out.
Right. And then there's that other dickwad who was also a Fox. I can't remember his name. It doesn't matter. He's such a dickwad. But he was the one who was in Chinatown, like, doing all those, like, Asian.
Jesse Waters.
That's it. Yep. And he went on vacation, just like.
Lots of racism against Asian people.
And he, just like Bill O'Reilly, went on vacation.
There's a lot of things wrong with Fox News. And,
so much.
Racism and sexual harassment are among the top.
Yes.
So Bolling's attorney, Michael J. Bow, responded saying, quote, Mr. Bolling recalls no such inappropriate communications, does not believe he sent any such communications, and will vigorously pursue his legal remedies for any false and defamatory accusations that are made. Because women be lying, right?
They be lying.
Women are
red
liars.
Red pill that shit. So Bolling, of course, has a history of making misogynistic remarks on the air.
This does not surprise us.
Duh. In September 2014, while discussing the first woman fighter pilot from the United Arab Emirates, who was leading the bombing of the Islamic State, Bolling said it would be more appropriate to say, quote, boobs on the ground, ugh, instead of, quote, boots on the ground, which I can't believe it just said boobs.
On the ground.
On the ground.
Ugh.
That's awful. And this, it's just boring.
Misogyny is honestly so boring.
It's boring.
Like, if you're going to be sexist, honestly, at least be creative.
Well, yeah, this is sort of what I say. Like, if you're going to be a shitty person, like, own it and be the best shitty person you can.
Yeah, like, it's honestly, this is not this is shit that women have heard before.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
This is not original content. So Fox News has since suspended bullying indefinitely since this reporting, quote, pending results of an investigation. And, you know, as Jamil Smith tweeted, it's almost as if Fox News, the favorite channel of Trump, has a rampant culture of misogyny, toxic masculinity, and sexual harassment. Also, it's almost like this fucking president has bragged about grabbing women by the fucking pussy.
I know. I mean, I still can't believe that that was something that people were trying to even pseudo-defend.
Mm-hmm.
And it just turns my stomach. It turns my stomach.
All right, Tevin, so let's get into some action items. So stuff you can do after you listen to the show. So what's our first action item?
So the first one is supporting Lambda Legal.
Yes.
Lambda Legal announced the other day that they're suing Trump over his trans ban. And they tweeted, quote, "See you in court, Mr. President," which is kind of like perma evergreen tweet.
I love that. The ACLU says that a lot, too. And
yeah.
It's like, the courts are quite the check on Trump.
They
so
are.
That is some badass shit.
Yeah. This was another recent action item in another pod, but it's worth repeating. Donate to the cause at lambdalegal.org/donate. They are an organization committed to achieving full recognition of the civil rights of LGBT community through litigation, education, and public policy work. And it's definitely a worthy cause, especially in these times, especially when we have things like a transgender service member ban.
Yeah, which is, again, I've been trying to stay updated on it, and it's not clear what's happening.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a story to keep on top of.
Absolutely. And Lambda Legal is on top of it, and they're really a great organization to donate to.
And support. Okay, so our second and final action item has to do with voting rights. So
yes.
This past Sunday marked the 52nd anniversary of the signing of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So, we wanted to do an action item around that. There was a great Vox piece last year that had a state-by-state plan to defend voting rights, and I definitely highly recommend reading the whole piece. It's called The Voting Rights Manifesto, A State-by-State Plan to Defend Democracy. Again, we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yes.
But if you Google it, it's a great piece. It goes more in-depth than what we're doing right now.
Right.
But essentially, here's a non-comprehensive list of what to push your state legislators on. Quote, implement automatic voter registration. So that's a system that automatically registers citizens when they come into contact with government agencies, like the DMV is a common one. And then automatic voter registration is also a great candidate for a nationwide wave of referendums in states that allow popular initiatives. And apparently 20 such states allow a method.
Yeah.
So if you're not able to push your state legislators on that, there's another method to do that in 20 states. This piece also recommends pushing your reps on enabling same-day voter registration, preparing for natural disasters, like extending hours, essentially.
Right.
When there's a natural disaster, allowing for online voter registration, restoring felons' voting rights, which, you know, those disenfranchised here are disproportionately people of color.
Right.
Implement all-male voting, enable in-person early voting, and then enable weekend voting and extended hours.
Yeah, I mean, those are all things that
will increase participation.
By a lot.
It's actually bananas. Someone pointed this out to me on my Twitter feed. It's actually bananas that voter rights is considered a partisan issue.
Right.
And the reason why it's considered a partisan issue is because the higher voter participation tends to be, the more likely it is to reward Democrats.
Right, right.
And, of course, we know the groups that are being disproportionately impacted by voter suppression are people of color, and they are people who tend to vote for Democrats.
Right.
So this is all by design.
Yeah. Ourstates.org is a great resource. I feel like we talk about it all the time.
It's worth plugging every podcast.
It's really worth it. So according to the state, 10 states are considering the restriction of voting rights, and 4 states have signed laws to restrict voting rights. So that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
18 states are considering the protection of voter rights, and 7 states have signed laws to protect voting rights.
Yeah, so you can go to ourstates.org, and it's really easy to see, like, where your state is at on certain issues.
Right. It's great. And, you know, it's really upsetting, but the 2016 election was the first presidential election without the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. And then Trump and the GOP are trying to suppress the vote even further with things like their bullshit
commission,
whatever. So it's even more crucial than ever to protect and restore voting rights at a state level, because obviously federally they're fucking around with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're looking for good Twitter follows around these issues, I'd suggest Mother Jones's at Ari Berman, and then the NAACP's Sherilyn Eiffel, and she's at SIFILL_LDF.
Yes.
So two great resources.
We will definitely link to them in the show notes so you can follow them.
Yeah.
Woo.
It's been a caftan kind of day.
It was a packed show. We thought that we would, you know, maybe not run long, but that, you
that's
know,
a cute thought.
That's a cute thought. That's literally never happened. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you back here on Thursday. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/HellbentPodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent.